build your home, the winner will foreclose your loan. To fix the roof, to plow the crow, to wax the plank, to arch the bow. To steal away, to arc the hassle, or overthrow your father's castle. Now to check your bait, to reel things in, to change your way. There's rhubarb piled up at your door, and someone's always bringing more and more. But there's no sugar in your cup, so everything turns out like bitter syrup. No one believes a word you say. You're a hearsay wind. Where are you blowing? Even all these empty-handed purists, it turns out, is each one a king in his own kingdom of knowing? Someone else play my piano just because I don't know how. I'm too old to be a human, but can I be Canadian? Too late to cook the season's cordial.
CFRU presents a special edition of the Glam Slam Ball at Silence. The Bar Mitzvah brothers are back from the dead for a special one-time reunion show. They'll be followed by Gwef's beloved all-star cover band, King Neptune and his Tridents, some of whom are parents and feel undead a lot of the time. The show wraps up CFRU's month-long Tuning in the Neighborhood Raise Your Voice fundraising campaign and takes place on October 31st at 9 p.m. at Silence, a fully physically accessible space located at 46 Essex Street in Guelph. For more information about this Halloween Glam Slam Ball, visit CFRU.ca. CFRU 93.3 FM, Tuning in the Neighborhood.
Hi, this is Gentleman Reg. I would not be where I am today without a CFRU. I spent so many years listening to it. I spent so many years volunteering for it. I learned a lot about music, about indie culture, about underground stuff, about queer issues, stuff that I had never been exposed to previously. CFRU 93.3 FM is an amazing resource. Donating to the Raise Your Voice funding drive, it's happening this week at CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph's Community Radio.
To make a donation to CFRU right now, call 519-837-CFRU. That's 519-837-2378. Operators are standing by. Or use our PayPal setup at www.cfru.ca.
Strong, no matter what goes on. Welcome back. You're listening to Guelph Prison Radio on CFRU 93.3. So I just wanted to do a shout out to the folks from Books for Breakfast. They were keeping it real here live, doing a live interview for 2 hours, which is pretty awesome. And what do I mean by here? I mean the Weston Community Center, because that is where CFRU is broadcasting. We've been here since 8 in the morning, and we're going to be here till 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So come on by. There's been a few people walking in. It's getting a little bit busier now as we're coming on later into the day. So if you are listening to the radio and you're stopping by the Weston Community Center, come say hi. We don't bite. And why are we at the Community Center? Well, it's actually CFRU's annual funding drive, which is called Raise Your Voice. And this year, our theme is Tuning in the Neighborhood. So basically, CFRU bought this lovely mobile studio, and they've had it at the Evergreen Seniors Center, and it's great. It's really awesome. It's not like the typical soundboard that you would see at a remote broadcast. It is a studio that you can build, which is pretty cool. And CFRU is hoping to, you know, have this mobile studio go around the community, hence the theme Tuning in the Neighborhood. But we have no more funding for it. So we're trying to raise money. We've been raising money for the entire month of October. We've had remote broadcasts. We've had shows. We've had DJ nights. We actually have a show this Friday at Manhattan's. It's a blues show, and it's going to be Connor Gaines' band is going to be playing. So if you're in the mood to listen to some blues music this Friday, you should totally check it out at Manhattan's. If you can't come out but you want to donate, there are several ways that you can do that. We have our PayPal account, and you can go to www.cfru.ca and click on the Raise Your Voice tab, and, you know, just find out a little bit more about Raise Your Voice. You can also call into the studio, and so we have an all request line that actually, regardless of the fundraiser, our request line, you know, is always working. And so you can call into the studio. The phone number is 519-837-CFRU, and you can make a pledge. People in the studio or people in the station will have pledge forms available. And so basically you'll make a pledge, and then our lovely outreach coordinator, Heather, will get a hold of you. And, you know, making a pledge, not only are you helping us to reach our goal, but also we have really sick swag. So, you know, if you pledge some money, you could get stuff like tea or a mug or a t-shirt or some CDs or stickers, all of this which we have hand at the Weston Community Center. Anyway, so that's enough about Raise Your Voice. But yeah, hopefully that, you know, inspired you to give a donation. So today on Guelph Prison Radio, we're going to be playing an interview with a friend of ours who went to Ferguson, Missouri. So for people who, you know, have been paying attention to the news, in August, a young teen by the name of Michael Brown was shot by the police in Ferguson, Missouri, and basically all these protests just erupted. It's very much race related. 90% of the police force in Ferguson is white, but the majority of the community is black. And Michael Brown was, you know, a teenager. He was unarmed. He was walking outside, and he was shot. And so they've kind of been demanding that a lot of changes be made to how the institution of the police works in Ferguson, and kind of asking broader questions as to why these things happen so frequently, as there were other two people who were shot in St. Louis, which is a neighboring community. And so we had a friend who went to Ferguson really recently, who's a journalist, and she was there 2 weeks ago. And so we're going to have her talking about her experience in Ferguson. But before we get to that, I'm going to play an interview that we did, and it's kind of an old interview. Usually we do the news, but we did not do the news today. And so I'm going to do an interview with a friend of ours who's based out of Toronto, and she works at, they work at a school which is an Afrocentric school. And so basically it's a school centered on people of color, and just like the history that, you know, surrounds Canada specifically about race-related tension. And so it's an elementary school. They have some pretty awesome learning models there, and this person is a teacher there. And so we did this interview back in the summer, but it's a really amazing interview. And I think that when we are talking about like police shootings, especially when it affects racialized communities, that we also need to be talking about some of the good things that are happening too. So without further ado, here is is the interview on Afrocentric Schools. But stay tuned. We got lots of really awesome music for you. And then we'll have that report back from Missouri. And you are listening to Guelph Prison Radio here on CFRU 93.3 FM.
Hey, folks. Welcome back to Prison Radio. You were just listening to My Victory, featuring Maya Angelou, produced by Jay Dilla. And then before that, you were listening to Rafif Ziada. I hope y'all are doing well. Today, we have somebody on the line. Can you hear us?
Yeah.
Do you want to introduce yourselves?
Hey, my name is Leah Newbold. My friends call me Leroy. I'm a teacher at Toronto Afrocentric, and I teach grade one.
Yeah, cool. So do you want to tell us a little bit about Afrocentric School?
Yeah, Afrocentric School is an elementary school, a K-8 alternative school in Toronto District School Board. And it was a community initiative that was lobbied for by parents and educators. We just finished our fifth year with our new principal, Joan Letty. Afrocentric School is Toronto's first public Afrocentric school, but it's not Toronto's first Afrocentric school. There's been a rich history of community-based, Black-focused, and Afrocentric schools in Toronto, including Umoja up in Rexdale.
Can you talk a little bit about why you think schools like these are important?
I think schools like Afrocentric is important because, first and foremost, I believe that Black education should be initiated and designed by Black communities. And I believe that our institutions need to be transformed to contribute to the liberation of our people, which for descendants of enslaved people in Canada and the U.S. and the Caribbean, education is rooted in the fight for liberation. So like in my first year of teaching, my grade two students looked at Haiti schools and they read this book called Night John. And Night John was an enslaved man who worked in the fields on a plantation. And Night John survived all the horrific things at the hands of his master. And when he arrived at the plantation, his back was raw from whipping and he was hauling a chariot attached to his neck. But what the children learn is that Night John had once escaped from slavery, but he came back to enslavement through his own choice. And the reason that he came back to enslavement was to teach people on the plantation how to read. Because Night John knew that the punishment for teaching slaves to read was very severe. So who were enslaved people was caught teaching other slaves how to read. In Canada and the U.S., they were often punished by having a finger or toe cut off. But Night John came back to teach this because he knew that reading would help to make his people free. So, like, enslaved people who knew how to read could pass rite passes to cross checkpoints in the night. They could read their master's record books. And what we're teaching our kids is that we learn so we could be free, and teaching them to participate in the fight for our freedom, our liberation.
That's awesome. And, I mean, obviously this links up with our show, Prison Radio, but I guess I was wondering if you wanted to define what exactly the school-to-prison pipeline was and how it works.
Sure, I can talk about that. The school-to-prison pipeline is a term that was coined in the U.S., but I think it's applicable to Canada also. And it looks at how students are pushed out of schools and into prisons because of institutional neglect, because of disengagement, and because of employing cultural deficit model, where our students are basically given the message that they can't learn. So, for example, in Toronto, we have 40% push-out rate for Afro-Caribbean students. And in the Canadian context, school-to-prison pipeline looks at the overrepresentation of Black boys in behavioral class, special education. It looks at over-policing of Black youth in schools and neighborhoods, like Jane and Finch and Malvern, and how these experiences contribute to disproportionately high number of Black men and women in Ontario prisons.
Can you talk a little bit about how you feel Afrocentric School is trying to disrupt the pipeline?
Afrocentric School disrupts the pipeline because it operates from a philosophy that says our students deserve safety, love, respect, and power. So it operates from a philosophy of personal responsibility as well, as opposed to cultural deficit model. Personal responsibility means that if my students fail, then I fail as an educator. So I would make my students successful by any means necessary because I have love for my community. So Afrocentric School disrupts the pipeline by making students successful, basically. In our first year, our school had 81% of students reaching provincial standard in writing math and 70% reaching standard in reading. So that was actually higher than the percent of students reaching standard at the TDSB, Toronto District School Board. and in the province of Ontario. And in the States, for example, that have 100% graduation rate. So that means that our students will be moving on with skills, but also with self-confidence, self-love, and yeah, pretty exciting.
Do you have any idea what those rates look like in other public schools that aren't necessarily Afrocentric?
Well, typically, students in our community tend to underscore on those standardized tests. So, especially in the area where our school is, Keele and Shepherd area, and most of the students in our school come from Jane and Finch area, so a lot of the schools there tend to underperform, not because the kids can't achieve, but because they're not being engaged in that test. I mean, the test is also biased, but that doesn't mean that our students can't succeed in it. We see succeed in life and all kind of institutions that are biased.
Can you talk a little bit about how your approach is different from the methods that are used in other public schools?
Yeah, the approach differs in terms of curriculum, but also in terms of instruction. So, like, we use the Ontario curriculum, but it would be through the lens of African and Caribbean experiences, and also through the lens of anti-oppression. So, for example, if I'm teaching about migration of mammals in science or something, I may choose to look at migration of African peoples to the diaspora, because we have to use Ontario curriculum, but you can interpret it in a lot of different ways. And we also place a lot of emphasis on the arts, because it's something that's engaging for our students, especially performance, music, dance, and looking at teaching literacy and numeracy through the arts. So last year at the holidays, my grade ones learned how to sing Esperanza Spalding Black Gold, but they also learned to read the lyrics. They learned how to act out the skit and record it on a film. And yeah, they were on stage saying, "Hold your head high as you can, high enough to see who you are, little man. Life sometimes is cold and cruel, but no one may tell you, so remember that you are black gold." So yeah, they would learn a lot of things through the art.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. I know when I went to a public school, it was not like that.
Yeah, people got treated like crap. Yeah, it's just intense. Well, I guess this leads me to like the next question, just in terms of, yeah, I feel like my experience in school was a lot of the black like students getting treated in ways that I knew they shouldn't be treated. And I guess if you could send a message to public school teachers about how to work with black students, what would you say?
I would say that if you're a non-black teacher in public schools, then you have a responsibility to learn what anti-black racism is, and you have a responsibility to take leadership from black community. So from your students, from your students' parents, from surrounding community, and do not use cultural deficit model to explain black student failure. Take responsibility. You have a responsibility to seek out examples where black students are successful and to replicate those examples within your classroom. And also that you need to understand our students are black gold, and that our children mean everything to us. So you have our everything in your hands. Don't take that responsibility and privilege lightly.
The cultural deficit model is, for people who may have never heard that term before?
Yeah, sure. Cultural deficit model basically says that our students aren't successful in the institution because our culture, because parents don't care about their kids and their kids doing well, or we're not successful because of poverty or because something within our culture prevents us from being successful. And I mean, obviously that's not true, because there's so many other education institutions in which we are successful, like historically and now. So that's why I'm saying people have to look at those examples and how to change the system to be successful for our students.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And I feel like having gone to a public school, that was often, I didn't know what cultural deficit model meant, but that was often what was used as like, these things happen because of this. And it's often very apolitical reasons.
Yeah.
The whole public school model doesn't incorporate anti-oppression at all, basically. Yeah. So having that incorporated, that's really amazing. We have a lot of women who listen to our radio show from time to time who are from Grand Valley, and we're wondering if there was anything you wanted to add or say. I don't know.
Any shout-outs?
Yeah, any shout-outs?
Okay, well, I guess shout-outs to all the people listening at Grand Valley, and shout-out to Anika Tafari and Marina Hodge, my teacher mentors, and everybody at Afrocentric and the guys at Joyceville, especially Wayne Nash, if you're still there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Is there anything else you want to add?
No, not really. Oh, I guess a lot of people were asking about the high school. And at the time, there wasn't a high school yet. But Afrocentric Elementary now feeds into two high schools. So there's one at Downsview and one in Scarborough. So if people are looking to do GED or to do high school, those are also alternatives, possibilities now.
Sweet. And for people listening who might be interested in maybe even sending their kids to the school, could you give like a bit of contact information for the Afrocentric school that you work at?
Yeah, you can find it on the TDSB website, and it's called Afrocentric Alternative School, and it's at 1430 Shepherd Avenue West.
Thanks for coming on the show. It's really inspiring to hear people talking about how school can look different and just be something that feels a lot more inspiring than the school system that a lot of kids have to go to right now.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
can just like transform people's experiences. That's really nice. It's really, really nice to hear. So thank you so much for coming on and talking a little bit about the school.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
The new moon rode high in the crown of the metropolis, shining like who on top of this? People was tussling, arguing and bustling. Gangsters of Gotham, hardcore hustling. I'm wrestling with words and ideas. My ears prick, seeking what will transmit, describe, and apply to transcript.
No, 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 no. Oh, yeah. I'm in chains, you're in chains too. Our uniforms and you wear uniforms too. I'm a prisoner, you're a prisoner too, Mr. Jailer. One of your own. Life is not about your policies. All